This podcast is proud to be a part of the Blueberry Network. Find freshly picked podcasts just for you at blueberry.com. That's blueberry, no ease, .com.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shelp.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are theater geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, a podcast about community theater and the performing arts. And we're all sitting around here with our good friend, Mr. Bob Miller. Hi, Bob. Welcome
to
Theater
Bob.
Geeks.
Oh, good to be here.
And Bob is a former member of our troupe here at Elkhart Civic, but has educated at University of Evansville in theater, and has moved on and is currently an equity actor and about ready to do a show in the regional theater here, playing Tevye. And I was mistaken because I thought that you had played Tevye before.
Yeah, but no, I have not. Everybody seems, well, I mean, look at me. Of course you think that. But and it could be, the honest mistake for you might have been that I did Zorba years ago.
Oh, maybe that's what I was remembering. That's a possibility.
They're so close.
Okay, well,
Well, they were both played by the same professional actor originally, right? No, Topol played the original.
Oh, that's true. Zero Mostel played the original.
Oh, he did? Yeah. Well, then he played the original
Tevye, too.
Zorba, too.
And Tevye.
Okay. All right. So that may be it.
Now that we've cleared all that up.
I don't know why I thought Topol was the original.
What our question was is, or the topic for today is, first of all, you started in community theater what age?
18. Actually.
18. And I can't remember what you were.
This lovely woman right here.
Okay.
My very first show out here was it was She Loves Me. My second one was with you. That was Guys and Dolls. Was my second show.
Oh, that's right. Well, what about thought Anything Goes was before Guys and Dolls.
Oh, it was. Anything Goes was my second show.
You can't remember worse than I can't remember.
There you go. But
it's not the years. It's the mileage.
A couple of things. Do you think that community theater, for starters, is a good start for a professional actor?
Oh, or wonderful. I think it gave me a lot of strengths that other kids in theater. Of course, I was older when I went into university, as you guys know. Uh-huh. I had a lot of great training. I was leaps and bounds up, I think, on the kids who were starting the theater program, because I had been in front of multiple audiences, done multiple productions, worked with multiple directors. If you think about most, young kids, it's all high school. It's all one theater, one director, one group of, it's always everybody's parents,
And maybe only two shows a year.
Yeah, exactly. And here, oh my gosh, we were cranking them out back in the day. I remember there was a couple of years where I think I was in almost every single show of the season. And, you were constantly working.
I think most of us have done that at one time or another. I don't do it anymore, but first couple of years, I was in a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Very enthusiastic.
I was very enthusiastic. And I was also male, which I probably helped because they didn't have a lot of guys. That's the problem. Yeah. I mean, it does. Community theater always has that.
Even at 18, you looked older.
Oh, yeah.
So that helped a lot, too. You didn't look like a little kid at 18.
My first time out was She Loves Me opposite Leslie, and I was playing Kodai, who was supposed to be the older Lothario. And, that was when Marcia and I first met. She was so shocked that I was only, she didn't know me, and she was so shocked that I was only 18.
I thought he was about 35.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing you in shows, because we're the same age.
Yeah, I think we are.
I think we're real close to the same age. Yeah, we're 51. So, I just remember seeing you in shows because I didn't start out here until I was 20, I guess.
Yeah.
But
we're surrounded by late bloomers.
Well, I remember watching you on stage and thinking, you were much more mature than what you really were. And I think it's just because you have that look,
Yeah, born character, man.
I always had a baby face until I lost all that fat around my chin.
And your hair turned and left.
Okay, Marcia.
Mine turned a long time ago. And now it is leaving.
I'm glad you found, because I think community theater is a great place to start.
Oh, yeah.
For kids. And of course, we start our program as early as 8 years old.
Yeah.
So, and in some community theaters, actually start younger. But And
it also gives you a chance to play a lot of roles that you never would be able to play out in a professional theater.
Until you're the right age. Exactly.
Until you're the right age. Yeah. Absolutely. Right.
And depending on the community theater, you will get better direction on and better experience than you do in a high school. And it depends.
You can.
I remember one production you were in where you almost totally lost your voice.
Yeah, well.
And we won't talk about that. Yes, he's still bitter about
lifelong,
that.
Lifelong. I mean, well, no, it was lifelong damage. I mean, that was, you were there, I think.
Well, I don't know.
You were in the periphery.
Was this a high school production
No, it was a community theater, but it was a community production.
Okay.
If I did, I've slept since.
And we're not, even though the person that directed it is no longer with us.
Ah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, I will say that sometimes if you're not careful in community theater, there are directors who could push you the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Well, here's if they're not experienced. Never try to outsing a 57 piece orchestra without a mic.
Yeah.
57.
That's how many he has.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And they but were between me and the audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was it that drove you to do your first community theater show?
A car.
Actually, I just decided because I loved acting. I discovered that in high school. I always give props to Elaine Smith, who was, you know, that special high school teacher that, you know, made me want to be an actor. And I graduated, and it was like I had such a bug. And I saw an audition notice, frankly. I saw one for She Loves Me. I didn't know what the show was. I mean, I was 18. I had never heard of the show or seen it or anything. And I walked in, and I got cast.
Well, you're lucky you can sing.
See? Yeah.
You wouldn't have gotten cast if you couldn't sing.
Well, no, but I mean, that's just the way it worked. You know, like you say, I was a guy.
I was reasonably
good looking, but I looked mature. I had the beard. I mean, I grew the beard when I was 14. I'm always hairy. And, you know, I mean, I just walked in off the street and got the role. Yeah. And it was, and I must say, for She Loves Me, I really want to say that that was one of the strongest casts I ever worked with at Elkhart Civic. And a lot of professional theaters. I mean, that was really a deep talent cast when you think back to who all was in that.
Right, right.
And it was a great experience and kind of never looked back.
Did it drive you, do you think, to then going on to college and deciding that that's what you wanted to do?
That and this woman here.
Yes, I nagged him. I'm a very good nag.
And her daughter. And her daughter, who's like a sister to me.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You need to go to this college.
You need to go to this college.
Yeah.
You need to study acting.
Well, the University of Evansville has a great program.
Yes.
Wonderful. So,
yes, they were ranked. I think they still are. But when I went, they were ranked the number one undergrad program in the country. And if they're not still ranked that, they are at least in the top three. But I believe they're still ranked that way.
So you graduated from high school and then you spent how many? Like 4 years before you went on, right? Or was it just a little bit under 4 years?
22.
Yeah.
Married. We got married.
I was going to say, you were married, which, that's a hard thing. You were married.
We came back from the honeymoon. I loaded up the Ryder truck and we moved to Evansville.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure. And then we had Amanda by the end of my junior year. Our daughter, they have no idea who I'm saying when I say Amanda, but Marla and I had Amanda. And, she was pregnant with Amanda while I was, Amanda was swaddling when I was doing Sweeney as my big senior show. And that's how I knew Amanda had a good ear, because when you're working in music and in Sweeney Todd, you have all those discordant notes and you'd hit that discord, you know, that's supposed to be there. And my little infant baby would go, make a face like, what are you doing? I was like, okay, she's going to be a singer, critic, or both.
Yeah.
So, and then you spent some time in Chicago.
Yes.
Okay.
About a decade
in Chicago doing regional everything.
It was, most of the musical theater houses in Chicago.
Okay.
I still go up there to audition, and every now and then I'll get something. The last thing I did up there was Taming of the Shrew with Chicago Shakespeare, played Baptista.
And but you were also with the lamented Candlelight Theater,
the late lamented,
the first dinner theater in the United States.
Right. Is that working there? Is that what got you your equity card? Or
no, my equity card came from Drury Lane, Oak Brook.
Okay.
Playing Andrew Carnes in Oklahoma.
Good Lord.
Hey.
That show will never leave me alone. But I did
that,
my first professional check came from Candlelight. That was the first
Theater
that I worked at. And then I kind of worked between there and Oak Brook, back and forth. Then when Candlelight was gone, I worked mostly at Oak Brook, a little bit up at Lincolnshire, and mostly, and also at Drury Lane Evergreen Park. Okay. Lincolnshire, I'm sorry, is Marriott Lincolnshire. Mm-hmm. But those were the three. I never worked. Well, I did work downtown, but nothing that really paid. It was all, there used to be a group in Chicago, and I don't know if they're still there. It was called the Chicago Shakespeare Project. And it was all equity actors. And it was basically book readings, you know, readers theater. And that was a lot of fun because you have a lot of people I will see that and go, oh yeah, I know them from, you know, Henry V, Part One, because it was all the older, everybody was age appropriate. And to be in a production of Shakespeare, like Henry the Fourth, Part One, that has 52 characters, most of whom are supposed to be middle-aged, to have 52 professional middle-aged actors up there reading the lines, even though it's just Reader's Theater, it was so cool because that's not something you get to do. That's a very expensive thing.
Yeah.
But since we were working for free, I got a lot of great experience doing that.
Yeah. So today, you know, you've worked, you're going to be at the, when does Fiddler on the Roof open this summer? I
believe that it is July 16th.
Okay. So if you're in Indiana, Northern Indiana in July, you should stop at the Wagon Wheel Theater and see Bob in Fiddler on the Roof.
The Wagon Wheel Theater is a regional theater. It used to be, I don't know if they don't really call it a summer stock because they work pretty much year round now, don't they?
Yeah.
Or most of the year?
Yeah, anymore.
Yeah, so it's not a summer stock kind of thing, but it's a regional theater, and you're playing Tevye. And one of the questions that we had was, you know, Tevye's been done.
And done.
And how do you do something like that, which, you know, and when did it come out? 1968, something like that, you know, and in the years intervening, it's become a classic. It's an iconic role. Everybody knows. Audiences have specific expectations of what Tevye is all about. Even if they haven't seen it before, they might. How do you keep that role fresh for the audience and for yourself and how do you avoid, you know, coming out and saying, oh, hi, I'm the latest Zero Mostel. And that's a hard thing because it's not fun to just mimic someone either.
No. And you don't want to, but maybe a break from a lot of other actors. I have no problem with watching someone else's work and learning from it.
Sure.
A lot of actors, it's like I said, the other analogy here is how do you do The King and I without doing a little Yul Brynner, you know,
because
that's what everybody sees is Yul Brynner. And you'll see actors who won't do anything like Yul Brynner and want to do everything completely opposite just to say it's my own. And that can fail dismally because there's a reason that person's iconic with that, because that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain roles that somebody really put their stamp on it because they got what the role's supposed to be. But to me, it's never been that difficult because I know what I will do, how I will react to the character. And Fiddler is one of those roles because there's a line at the very beginning of Fiddler that is so iconic that it's made fun of all the time, from Family Guy to everything. A Fiddler on the Roof sounds crazy, no?
Right.
Yeah, I've seen, and you could do that 15 different ways.
Sure.
And 14 of them could possibly be awful. You know,
right?
But it's which one
or parodies,
like a Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah. Exactly. No, how do you deliver it? Do you deliver it really dramatic or really light? You know, I mean, there's all the different ways you can play it, and really, ultimately, what it comes down to is how are you approaching the character, and is it real for how you're doing it?
Does that kind of thing change from night to night?
A little. I mean, that's the magic of live theater. You can, I mean, and I've seen shows that, you know, I was involved with and gone and seen several nights simply because I want to see what they're going to do tonight. And that is the fun. It's also the fear, but it is the fun of live theater, right, that it changes nightly, and it can change, as you guys well know, it changes drastically according to how the audiences react.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the hugest things about live theaters, that the audience isn't giving it to you.
Shows it's a short show. Yeah, yes. Very short show. Early night.
Yeah, as you say.
Sometimes, yeah, after about 20 minutes of that, then that's what the cast starts thinking. Well, at least it's an early night.
When you hear in your headset, can we just go to curtain call now? Let's just go to curtain call now.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
I still remember just before doing a show at the Candlelight, assistant stage manager came back with the swords, and we had this show. I think it was called Corpse, and it was like a tiny house. I mean, literally, I think he came back and said, there's good news and bad news. There's like 15 people out there, but the good news is with these, we can take them. Now, actually, that show, I remember it after that. That show was really, the audience was great. We had a lot of fun doing it. It was one of the best audiences we had. So you don't know by numbers or whatever how it's going to be. But when you walk out there and you see this, because that was a big house. It was the Forum Theater, which was part of Candlelight's complex. It was a really nice proscenium theater up there.
Right.
It looked like there was nobody there. You're like, oh, there you are. Yeah.
So. Wow.
Yes, you just have to put that out of your mind.
Uh-huh. Well, and how many times have we told people you give the best performance you can possibly give, no matter what? We were talking not too long ago. We did a show. Kevin Agelski and I did a show together in South Bend. And one night there were more people on stage than there were in the audience. Mm-hmm. Wow. And yet we did it and we had a great time and the audience really appreciated it. And that's, you know, you just give it your all no matter
those
what.
People paid the same price
for
the ticket.
Exactly right.
So people over there, you know, it's the old cliche, but it's very, very true.
Yeah.
Well, and Fiddler, you know, it just turns around that the old shows are what people want to see. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it all the time, but they don't want to take a chance on anything new. They want comfort, and Fiddler's right in the comfort zone.
That's
like,
true.
Like Oklahoma and Brigadoon and Sound of Music, and it's like, oh, if I have to sit through them one more time, but that's what people want to see.
And
familiar.
To be fair, you know, you the problem. One of the problems with an Oklahoma or even a Fiddler is that the more it's performed, the more bad performances are out there that you can see. However, if you see a really good one, then it's kind of fresh all over again. Yeah. I mean, you see a great performance of a classic. It's like, wow, it's like I remember it the first time. And that's kind of, you do get that.
Well, that's what you shoot for. And I will say this about Fiddler. The thing I've always liked about Fiddler is if you think about it, it's one of those shows that, it's funny to me that Fiddler has such a strong audience in the Midwest when you think about it. It's a Russian Jew. But the reason is there are not a lot of shows written about a working class, middle-aged guy. Mm-hmm. That's what Fiddler is at its core. Uh-huh. It's a guy who's raising a family. He's worked his whole life. You know, he has this little dairy farm. He's not wealthy. He's not good looking. He's not particularly, you know, everybody doesn't shout his name when he walks in the local whatever, you know. He's just the guy. And that's what that show is at its core. It's dealing with life, and it has a great connection to the audience,
right?
And that's the cool thing of Fiddler. Mm-hmm. I think that's why it stood up so well.
And it has great music.
Yes,
it has
great music. But it's not really Ralph Cramden with a yarmulke. No, not really.
David, how long have you been thinking of that line? Whoa,
it's Norton.
It's Norton. But in a way, it's like what you're describing is kind of like a Ralph Cramden, a guy who's trying to struggle and doing that kind of thing. Yeah,
it's a different type of guy, but it is.
It's a classic. It's the classic working class guy. Who has troubles and also brings a lot of comedy to his life as well.
That's how he deals.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when were you cast for the show?
They asked me when they announced the show midsummer last year when I was.
So you've known for a year that you're going to play this role.
Yeah.
Okay. When did you start your preparations for it?
Actually last fall, but right now I've been on a break because I don't like to you don't want to overthink something before you get in. The other thing with live theater and summer stock is killer for this because you do it in 2 weeks, as you know.
Right.
But it's I don't like to walk in with everything in my mind, because then if I've already planned my entire performance and I walk in and the director wants something different, which is what directors do, that can throw me right out the window. I mean, you can have a meltdown.
Right. Like,
that's not at all what I was thinking.
Right.
And that's the collaborative effort. I've always said, you know, they kind of hire me on as the old guy to kind of help the young actors who haven't done this much. And, you know, because you're working with all these college kids. And I always say the theater's kind of a stew and everybody's an ingredient. And you can't have too much of any one thing. Everybody has to put theirs in.
Right.
So you got to, and the director is the chef. So you got to, I get very upset when I see people who will, and unfortunately, you see this more and more, who will try to ignore directors or try to, you know, fight. Now, I will argue my point with the director, but yeah, ultimately, as Ray Fruin, I know you know Ray.
Yep.
He's a director up in Chicago, and he and I are about the same age, and we always thought alike and all that. And he said something once that I thought is absolutely perfect. He said, you know, a director could say to you, I want you to do this with a line. And you could say, well, I would rather do this. The director said, well, I'll let you do it once. And then the director says, you know, I still want you to do this. Now you have an option. You can either do what the director wants or you can leave the show. There is no say, yes, I'll do what you want and do it your way when the show opens. And that is, you know, and it's a very important thing because there are people who think they can get away with that. Mm-hmm. And can't do that. Mm-hmm. So that's the nature of the beast.
The director is always watching you.
Yes.
Well, if, yeah, and to, you know, to be fair, the I mean, it's not like the director's being a jerk about it. The director is seeing the big picture.
You don't see yourself. I mean, yeah, you have to trust that person.
But it's also, I mean, the director should allow for that experimentation. Yes. That once at least, and say, you know, maybe I am wrong. Maybe that is the right direction to go.
Yeah.
And it's not always about changing an entire character. Sometimes it's just about changing how you're interacting with one person on stage or something like that. And you want to try something new, and the director should allow that as long as it's kind of within the parameters of everything else. I mean, if it's totally out there, then the director should probably, you know, but, you know, but maybe even then try it.
Okay. See. How difficult is it to do a show like that in 2 weeks?
every year it's more difficult.
Well,
it really is.
Yeah, I mean, I know that. But what I mean is not everybody that's in the cast has had the amount of time or known in advance what roles they were going to play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I first started on Wagon Wheel, you didn't know halfway through the season.
So how difficult is that to do it in 2 weeks?
The first couple times,
it
is. It's psychotic. Yeah. I mean, it really is.
Oh, is it an eight-hour day? Is it an eight-hour day for 2 weeks?
Yeah. Basically every day for 2 weeks. But you got to think in summer stock. Now, I'm not doing this because I'm now the guest artist, which means I only do one show. But it used to be, you know, summer stock when I started down there with Tom. You got to remember, it's an 8-hour rehearsal period. But then you're doing a different show. You're going to lunch. You're doing a different show. And then you get to bed at whatever hour after that show is over, and you come back and rehearse the next show. And you do that every day for the entire summer. And that's how you get through 7 shows and, you know, what, 2.5, 3 months. You're just like,
but
bam,
it's
bam, bam.
Great
bam.
Experience.
Oh, it's
kids.
Wonderful.
Well,
experience.
And that's I think that's one of the reasons why summer stock is full of young people with guest artists.
Yes.
Because young kids just, they have that kind of energy to be able to go and go and go. Because I remember my first year of summer stock, I mean, I was up sometimes until 1 or 2 in the morning because I was designing the sets and helping to build the sets. I was in the shows. I was, and so, you know, by the time you finish doing your memorization for the day, and sometimes you might have a rehearsal real quick, like an hour long rehearsal after a show closed at night, even sometimes you would rehearse from 10 to 11, you know, because the dance needed to be rehearsed. And you know, if you didn't rehearse it, it wasn't going to be ready for the show. And it was nice to be young. I don't know if I could do that now.
The process that's always been hardest on me is everybody has their own method of working. I'm kind of physical memory when it comes to lines.
Yeah.
I need to know what I'm doing physically. So sometimes that's how I justify the line is the movement I'm doing, or vice versa. And I very rarely do I come in off book for anything. So that's the hard part, is trying to do that all in 2 weeks and come in, you know, learn it. But like I said, every year it gets harder.
But there are a lot of people that you said, there's some people in community theater cast who cannot learn unless they have their blocking first.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They just, because it in their head, it's
how
like
it sets.
Muscle memory, you know,
right.
Well, I go over here and now I say,
Yeah.
And then it gets to be more natural, but
right.
you have to know where they're going first.
Yeah. Some actors really can't memorize until they know the blocking. I mean, I've run into that. Yeah. In community
I just
theater
could
too.
Never understand actors who could walk in and have all their lines learned when mm-hmm. they didn't know how the other characters were going to be yeah. or where they were going to be. I mean, to me, that's time wasted to try and learn right. it like that.
Yeah. Well, it was a problem. We just did 39 steps and we were kind of improvising things all the way along. And I never formally blocked the show. And people figured things out because that was kind of the part of the deal with that show. And it was difficult for at least one of the actors to work that way because, wait a minute, I got to know where I'm going. And then he had to write it down and then it was okay. Then that was fine. But then it would change because somebody was, you know, they'd come up with something. And so, yeah, it was hard. But it all came out in the end, but it was a different way of working for a couple of the people there. So,
yeah. Well, that's cool. You learn something new all the time.
There you go. There you go. So, you are also a master set builder, or you've done a lot of set building. You supported yourself in Chicago doing that.
You got to have a day job.
That's right. Yeah.
Tell everybody who goes into any kid that wants to talk about going to keep your day job. And that's not a meme thing. You're going to need a day job because even when there were years in Chicago where I did shows nonstop. And then you would have a 3-month, you know, so how do you pay bills?
Right.
Because actors aren't rich. So you got to be making money. And I worked in Chicago for years. I worked for Chicago Scenic Studios, which is a really good stage and, you know, our theater building thing. In fact, we built the Democratic National Convention while I was doing Oklahoma. You know, and I would do that. I mean, I was younger then, but if I was up there, I'd be doing it now. They would give me the time off. They were really great because they were in theater, so they understood. I would get cast in a show. You know, you have the 2 weeks, and professional theater is the same thing. Normally, it's a 2-week rehearsal process.
Yeah.
So they'd give me 2 weeks off. I'd go rehearse the show, open it, and then come back and work in the shop. And I'd do, you know, full-time work at the shop and then go do the show at night. And, do that. I did that through most of everything I was doing.
Which
Chicago.
Is interesting, not unlike community theater.
It's exactly like
yeah.
I mean, it's just that instead you were working in scenic design and then going to the theater at night, but you know, that's the same thing. You know? Yeah. So community theater did prepare you.
Oh yeah.
See? Yeah. So
there was
and
no
our
change.
Rehearsal periods are 6 to 8 weeks, but it's not full time. It's like a couple, 3 hours a night maximum.
Yeah, you're doing
a couple of times a week.
Work,
it's not even every night of the week.
Not even every night.
Well, it depends. You're in one of my shows, it might be.
That's right.
People, don't say that, John. No one will want to audition.
No, but it does. It's some characters. If you're leading a show, sometimes you'll be at rehearsal 5 nights a week,
and sometimes you'll want to be.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we've been talking to Bob Miller, who is a
what's your professional name?
Yes. Robert J.
Robert J. Miller.
Is that your equity name? Robert Joseph Miller.
For us, it's always been Bobby Miller.
I was going to say other. I met him as Bobby.
Bob. Anyway, but yes,
I say
Robert
that now,
J. Miller,
who is
former participant in community theater, but is now an equity actor, going to be appearing at the Wagon Wheel Playhouse as Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof, starting
June 16th.
July 16th. So if you're interested in that, that's in Warsaw, Indiana, nearby beautiful downtown Warsaw, Indiana. And so check that out. And they're a very high quality regional theater. They do some great work down there.
I love
theater in the round too, which is an unusual.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about that sometime.
That's true.
We've never talked about different staging and stuff. Bob would be a good person to talk to about theater in the round.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we'll have Robert J. back. Sometime.
Robert Joseph.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, so it's just Robert J.
Please be sure to stop by the store online at theatergeeks.com/store, where we've got hats, cups, mugs, and Marcia's favorite is what?
Teddy bears.
Okay,
and
I'll
mugs.
Answer your microphone. I can't hear
teddy
you.
Teddy bears and coffee mugs.
Teddy bears and coffee mugs. That's true. And John's loves.
Everything about that online store because I don't want to make Martian
did
magic.
You,
no,
did
no,
you get the,
no.
Did you,
I don't know even why we sell that.
Do you buy the clock yet?
Did you I haven't.
It's because people wear underwear.
Anyway, stop by the store. We got all sorts of great stuff there. Get all your geek gear. Also, make sure that you can listen to us in a number of different ways on iTunes. We are on the Blueberry Network. We
Marshall
are
likes.
On...
Apple TV.
That's true. You can listen to us in glorious stereophonic sound on your Apple TV.
Podcast.
And you can
be all over your house.
There you go. Yeah. And you can also.
Did you say blueberry without any E's?
I said no. Blueberry with no E's.com. Yeah. Okay. And you can also listen to us on Stitcher, on demand radio, and everywhere great podcasts are sold or given away. So listen to us and also send us some. Oh, by the way. Oh, yes. And remember, we are one of the top 20 podcasts on
the internet. Oh, please. We don't have the internet. People over the head over that one.
Please jump on.
But we are. We are. I'm very proud of it. We work hard.
There we go. That's all from us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.